Hi, everybody. This is Dave Rabbit.
And I'm his co-host, Johnny Anonymous. And we do a show called The ATS Mix on AboveTopSecret.com. You know, after Dave and I get through doing one of our shows, we like going and listening to one of our sister shows on the Above Network LLC.
And you know, Johnny, one of my favorites is over on BelowTopSecret.com. It's the new and hilarious BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock, his partner. When you're looking for lighter entertainment, these guys will rock your world with the best of sports, news, television, radio, and general discussion.
Oh, good.
They feature member posts, member on-air conversations, and celebrity interviews. This is a show that everyone is really going to enjoy.
And if by chance politics might be more your cup of tea, then AbovePolitics.com is going to be right up your alley. You know, the Above Politics show features Martin Bain and Justin Case, and they give you insightful and informative information that you're just not going to find anywhere else. They feature intelligent conversation on posts from our members, member interviews about their stance and platforms, as well as interviews with noted political figures and authors. You know, Dave, this really is your one-stop political shop.
And you're right about that, Johninator. So come join us all. Deny ignorance with Johnny and I on the ATS Mix Show.
Deny boredom with the BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock.
And deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with our friends Martin Bain and Justin Case.
And then you too can be a part of the revolution. Above Network LLC.
Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
President Bush continues to not let facts get in the way of his ideology.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello and welcome to another fun-filled edition of the Above Politics Show. I'm Justin Case.
And I'm Martin Bain. And as we are still in a quiet period with the US elections, we have another ATS member on the show, Justin.
We certainly do, and today we're going halfway around the world right into your backyard. We're going to be interviewing ATS member Infinite, who's also known as Daniel. And so, Martin, why don't you just lean over the back fence?
I would, but it's actually quite a big country we have here, and I think Daniel's just a couple of buildings away from me, so what I'm going to have to do is probably call him, so we can call him up, get him on the line.
Actually, I took the liberty of doing that already, and he's on hold, so why don't you reach behind you and pick up his dossier off the printer and tell us a little bit about him.
Well, I have done it. Infinite's been a member on ATS since August 2003, and he's a regular contributor to the political forums on AboveTopSecret.com. And a couple of his recent threads, which we may or may not talk about, are the Bank of England wants to take on bank loans to help the mortgage market. He said another one on fears emerge over Russia's oil output. And then a European post here on Silvio Berlusconi. God, I hope I've said that right. No, I've got his surname right. Ahead in Italian exit poll. So we've got somebody who, fair to say, is a fairly political heavyweight. And so, yes. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, everyone.
How are you today, and what city are you in?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm in a city called Canterbury. You probably read the book The Canterbury Tales. It's the head of the Church of England. So it's a very quiet, conservative town.
That would sort of lead us into sort of what sort of got you first interested in politics then, because you're a fairly regular poster on the forums.
Well, it probably comes from my parents, because my dad was a communist when he was youth, and my mum's a conservative. And so it really took my dad was always into politics when I was a kid, and when I was an early teen, he was always emphasising that I should always vote. And at first I thought politics was really boring, like most people, but when I started watching it, I got very interested into it, and it's really hard to explain, really. I just took to politics like a duck to water, really, and found it really fascinating.
So how would you describe yourself politically then, if you wanted to let all the members at AboveTopSecret.com sort of get to know you a little bit more?
Well, I used to say on the board that I was a liberal, but as the older I've got from HS, I've sort of become very libertarian. But I think many HS members are aware that I'm a British Republican, and that's That's probably my main political ideology, really.
Just talk a little bit more about that, because you can, you know, we're a global forum and you can talk about republicanism, and people might think that you're, you know, maybe more US Republican, or even some people, and I've sort of seen this on ATS sometimes when you say from a UK perspective that you're a Republican, people then sort of have connotations that you're associated with Northern Ireland and maybe with terrorist side of things there. So just give us a little picture of what you mean by republicanism.
Well, as everyone is fully aware, United Kingdom is a constitutional monarchy. That means that we do not elect our head of state, and Parliament is sovereign. And the problem is with our democracy, because everyone refers to Britain as like the mother of all parliaments, is that we really don't elect our head of state, and that's what a Republican is. You emphasise the fact that you want to be able to not just elect your government or your council ministers, you want to elect the head of state. That's what a British Republican is. That is what Republican is. Desire to elect.
Which I think leads very swiftly onto a question from last week's guest interviewer on the show, Expert 11, who sort of asked you, what constitutional model do you think should replace monarchy in the UK?
Well, your former Irish Taoiseach, De Valera, who was very involved in the Irish Republican movement, he got asked that question when Ireland became a republic. And everyone assumed that he was going to take, like, the US model, because that's what they did in Venezuela and Colombia. And he said no, and because it's literally like a dictatorship. And I would never recommend that for Britain, because the head of state should always be separated from the head of government. I probably think the head of government is not only appointed by the head of state, he's also nominated by his peers in Parliament. So that's a bonus, because we don't do that in this country either. I know many people said, oh, we didn't vote for Gordon Brown. I was like, well, of course you didn't. You vote for a representative. You don't vote for the government. So that's the best model to take, is the Republic of Ireland.
But if you think about that one, clearly, I'd say to you, and I'd be probably fairly confident on this one, Daniel, that yours is probably still a minority view in the United Kingdom.
Well, yes, I'm involved in the Republican movement in the United Kingdom, and we make around about, last time we checked, 25%, only 25% favour Republic. It's because the monarchy is become such embedded in this country. It's a tradition nobody will want to get rid of, because everyone turns around and says, well, President Blair or President Thatcher, well, you can vote them out, but people in this country still won't accept it. They see it's like kind of a tradition, and you're becoming like more like Europe. And I think it does feed into the European Union scepticism in this country, where people think, well, if you're going to take away our monarchy, what's next? The pound? It's quite silly, really.
And that's a very good point, and leads me on to the sort of whole European thing. So where do you sort of see, what do you sort of think about the UK and the EU? Do you think that we should be more involved in the EU? Do you think we've got it about right?
Before the credit crisis, I was completely in favour of EU Euro membership, because I'm a pro-European. But if you've looked at the performance of the ECB, they haven't really started cutting rates, and the reason why, because the way the committee's made up, it's not like the Bank of England or the Federal Reserve, it's people appointed. In the ECB, all the members are part of the members, or 15 members of the Euro, and the most powerful economy in the Eurozone is Germany, and their three members don't want a rate cut. But France needs a rate cut because it's slowing down. Ireland needs a rate cut. It's going to recession. Spain's in a recession. Portugal's in a recession. And Italy's in like stagnation, and they need help. But because you've got a monetary union which is not overrunning a sovereign nation, it leads to political infighting between member states. And I think we were right in the end to stay out of the euro. On the whole question of European Union, of course we should be in the EU. You know, we're a European nation. Well, little old Britain can, you know, fight on our own. We don't have an empire anymore. We're not top dog. And we should just understand and just respect the fact that we're not the only people in the world. We shouldn't really act like we're better than everyone else. We should play our part in Europe. And if we did, it'd be a stronger place.
So if you say take that to the logical extension there, Daniel, do you believe that we should accept the euro as a currency in the UK?
Well, either way you look at it, it's going to happen. It won't happen, obviously, under Gordon Brown, but looking down the line 10 years from now, we'll be in the euro. Because by the time China becomes the global power or starts to speed up, you have India, we'll have no choice, really, but to bow down. And I've always said on HS that I just feel that for a couple of years now, the UK economy is starting to get squeezed on our own. So it's only really a matter of time before we go. And the sooner we go, probably the better.
if you're not in favor of the monarchy, how would you phase it out? It's not, you can't just send these guys a pink slip and say, hey, you're gone on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, believe it or not, it's difficult. You probably heard of an act in the United Kingdom called the Human Rights Act. Before that was passed, it was illegal in this country to advocate a republic. You could go to prison for life for advocating it. And if you want to stand in Parliament as a Republican Party, it would be difficult because you have to swear an oath of allegiance to the Queen.
You better not let Hillary Clinton hear about this.
So, Hillary's a good person. She'll make a good president. The thing is, it'd be difficult would it be some sort of mass protest, revolution, millions of people? Would they still go? I don't know. It would be difficult with the law.
But yeah, because fundamentally you've touched on a very good point there, and it's just an education for everybody else that every act of parliament in the UK needs royal assent. So you can't imagine that the monarch, whoever that be, whether it'll be Queen Elizabeth II, Charles, or maybe even someone else, is hardly, Daniel, going to sign an act of parliament that actually gets rid of them as the head of state.
Well, yeah, because the last monarchy to use their veto was Queen Anne in 1707 against the Scottish militia. You could argue if they refused to sign the act, would that cause public unrest, which would lead to revolution? I honestly don't know. It hasn't happened, but
Parliament
is sovereign. So, pardon?
And I just don't think that the UK is militant enough to go down that road. I mean, you know, we can argue the merits of the monarchy against a republic and whether we should have an elected head of state. And, you know, I can see some advantages in having an elected head of state because you get the ability to vote them out. But, you know, I just can't see the UK people rising up in arms against this. And I think if it does happen, it's going to be a slow process that potentially you and I may well be very old men or even, you know, be buried in the ground before it happens. I just don't see what the groundswell or a single catastrophic event that may occur to turn the British people away from the monarchy.
Exactly. When Princess Diana died, the support for Republic only went up to 40%, and the Queen panicked. And you think, if there was a lot of anger because she wouldn't lower the flag to half mast. I don't think this country is not militant enough to do something like that, to be honest. I can't really see it.
And I'm just sort of interested, and I know clearly you have a very, you know, a very passionate view that, you know, we shouldn't have a constitutional monarchy and the potentially the Queen of head of state. But I'm just sort of wondering if maybe this is a fairly controversial view, if, say, the title moved not necessarily to Charles but to his son, whether having his son as king to succeed Queen Elizabeth II could maybe put a bigger nail in the Republican movement, because I think many people would see that as a modern and intelligent thing for the royal family to do.
Everyone used to say that Charles would be a drive for a republic, but when you move on to William, Harry, and even Princess Beatrix and Fergie's children, none of them are interested in it. Harry said he wished he was born in a different life. William said he's not really interested in being king. So could that be how it comes about, that the family just want to be normal? They've had enough of it. Could the press drive them to it?
Speaking of the press, I'd like to take off on another tangent here. As you know, Prime Minister Gordon Brown is in the United States today, and as a matter of fact, as we are here in the ATS studio doing this show, he's in the Rose Garden with President Bush talking to the press, and this is getting almost no coverage here in the States because his visit is being overshadowed by that of the Pope. So I'm curious to know, is anybody in Britain reporting on what your own Prime Minister is doing over here?
They are, but they're taking the negative approach of it, which is saying, how did Downing Street not understand that the Pontiff, who has made the visit's been in the pencil work for a year, decided to coincide with it? It's amazing that Downing Street turned around and said, we didn't know he was going. It's hard to imagine that these people went to some of the best universities in the country, and they decide to book a visit on the same day the Pope goes, the head of the Catholic Church.
I'm really surprised that this happened, because the British government is known for its ability to schedule, coordinate, host, and even cater state visits. So I'm with you. How does somebody in British civil service make this mistake, and are they going to keep their job?
Well, you said that British governments are used to it. well, we've got a new government under Brown, and it's not reported in America, but over in Britain, he's made major mistakes. And people have called him like the Diver and the Cavity, because when he took over, his popularity shot up because there was like catastrophic, like biblical events in Britain. He dealt, and everyone thought, well, is he going to call an election? You know, get his own mandate, get 100% majority in Parliament, kill the Tories. He went there, the conference, done a speech, kind of laid it out for David Cameron, open goal. Cameron came out, laid out this a decent policy, the shadow chancellor turned around and said, when we come to power, we're going to lift the threshold of inheritance tax to £1 million. And his lead was cut, and he turned around and said, I'm not holding a general election now. And that just killed him. And that's what they're focusing on here now in Britain. They go back with all of his mistakes. They link this White House with it to it. They talk about the abolishment of the 10p low rate for poor people in this country, which one minister has resigned over, his own finance minister has criticised, his own backbenchers have criticised. It's really in chaos over it as a government. They're like Callaghan, really. I'd be surprised if they win the next general election.
What is the general opinion on the war now that you've got such an unpopular leader? Not that we here in the States know anything about it.
Well, when Blair left, everyone said one thing he has to do is he's got to pull him out. He's got to get the troops out. It's unpopular. People just want it. Just, you know, even those that support it, like myself, just think they're not doing anything now. Bring them home. And he came round and said in Parliament that he was going to bring half of them home. Everyone was okay then. But then the election that never was didn't happen. And all of a sudden there was chaos in Iraq. They're not coming out now. So that's damaging now, because people said he used the troops as a political football in order to try and get votes for him. It's just, as I just said, Tom, in the previous question, it's just chaos over here. This government is in stalemate. It's not really doing anything. Members of the government are criticising each other. Two ministers were alleged to nearly have a punch-up the other day over someone telling someone else what to do in their department. And it's just, it's mind-boggling, really.
So clearly you sort of see potentially that the sort of whatever Labour have gained in the past 12-odd years could potentially be slipping away very quickly.
Oh, yes. I used to be a member of the Labour Party. I cancelled my subscription around about half an hour ago because of the 40-day detention, removing the 10p tax, infighting, not really governing, as I previously said, and the way they've handled this banking crisis as well, because they took, was it 72 hours to rescue Bear Stearns? It took them around about, I think it was 8 months to deal with Northern Rock. What this government's reputation was, which you agree with me, was the economy. That what kept them in power, that a socialist party could come in, be capitalist, and it would work. And now the wheels have come off. You know, Brown's a lame duck. It was his golden arm, and that's my record. I brought the growth. I brought the low interest rates. I brought the low inflation, even though I changed the index. So we go by consumer price, not retail price. He was untouchable, and seeing this is all gone, there's really nothing else it can do.
But interestingly, I'd say look back, and I suspect you may be old enough to remember this, but sort of towards the end of the Thatcher years, I mean, you think Thatcher won two elections, you know, it was all very rosy, but towards the end of Thatcher's reign in power, things started to go wrong for her. And I just wonder whether we have the concept in the UK of we're probably happy to elect a party for maybe two or three terms, but it's almost some self-destructive thing that says, right, after two or three terms, we actually just want to get rid of you and, well, pounce on any mistake, and we just want to put someone else in. Because consistently in the UK, we've never sort of had, you know, 20, 25, 30 years of just a single party, let's say in the last 150 years, of a single party being in charge.
Well, when Thatcher left, I was only four when she left, but John Major said it in an interview about a couple of months ago when he was on about his government. He said he got to around about 92, 93, and he goes, he felt the mood turning, that the public just thought, we don't want change as a prime minister, we want change as a governing party. And I think that's what's happening now. And as you said, why is it a mistake that no party governs 30 years? Is that really a good thing, living under, well, what would be a one-party state?
I myself am for term limits here in the United States, so I agree that it would be in everyone's best interest to have a regular turnover. But you know, it's also interesting to me, because as I listen to you guys talk, the labels are different, but we're having the same debate in this country over Republicans and Democrats.
I'd say to our American counterpart, the American elections are really interesting. It's fascinating that the debate that's going on, that so many Americans have just got up and thought, right, we want change. Because I think I wrote it on a thread on PTS, which I called the Silent Revolution, where I talked about all these in the Western world that people have just suddenly got up in the numbers and said, we want to change now. We want this to happen. You saw in France, 85% of them turned out and said, right, we either want an extreme left candidate in Royale, who would probably turn France into a socialist republic, or we want Sarkozy, who will do the Thatcherite reform. And it seems that it has spread into America. They've had enough of this little nitpicking. They just thought, right, we want decent health care, we want gun control, and we want immigration dealt with.
So swiftly moving on then, and I know you touched on it about you seemed fairly enamoured by Hillary Clinton. Who do you think of the two Democratic candidates would make the best president, and who do you think is going to get the nomination?
Well, you probably should say my opinions on Hillary Clinton are biased. I'm from Northern Ireland. Too early to call, I think, because I think she has experience over Obama, and I think the wheels are starting to come off Obama now, and people are starting to realise that he can be beaten. I really can't see Obama getting a nomination. I reckon the superdelegates will give it to Hillary, and I reckon she will get a nomination. And if you want me to name who I think will probably win the presidency, I probably reckon McCain will probably do it.
Well, so you reckon, despite the fact that there's sort of this huge feeling of wanting to change, that the US people potentially aren't ready to elect either a white woman or a black man as president?
I think it was on CNN they were talking about that. The problem the Democrats have run so long is that they've tribalised the party now. We saw the opinion poll. They said Obama supporters wouldn't vote for Hillary and Hillary supporters wouldn't vote for Obama. And I think this would be the election where the Democrats literally hung themselves. They had a chance to win it. And I think all this little nitpicking between the two candidates, I think will probably cost them. Or unless, as what they were saying on Fox, unless whoever gets the nominees for Democrats will have to literally praise and thank the other one and to be all huggy-huggy in order to save the Democrats from what McCain will win.
So does that mean then that you think that whoever of Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama almost has to pick the other as the vice president to keep the unity in the Democratic Party?
It would be the dream ticket would be Clinton Obama or Obama Clinton. I think that would be unique. There are talks that the Republican VP, people say it'd be Romney, but I reckon it might even be Colin Powell might be brought forward to be the VP.
Going to see what Justin had to say on that.
Well, I think General Powell is completely and totally retired. I can see the point. It was discussed at one point in his career, just after he was sworn in as Secretary of State, that we were possibly seeing a future president. But honestly, when he stood in front of the United Nations with the very poor evidence for the Iraq War and made that speech, I watched it myself, and I realized that by the time he finished that speech, his career was over with.
And then what about, as Daniel said, about the dream ticket for the Democrats? I mean, just how much of a reality is it that whoever wins is going to invite the other to be the vice president?
Oh, I think they hate each other so much at this point that they won't do it. There's so much antipathy in both camps. And as a matter of fact, last night in Philadelphia, Senator Clinton and Senator Obama had their 21st debate, and it was real interesting watching because when they did bother to look at each other, they were both just you were expecting somebody to somebody to pull out a bat or something and just go for it. They were really quite hostile towards each other. And then they would look back at the camera, they would smile, the eyes would dilate, they'd be all sweetness and light, and they would bloviate for whatever the time limit.
Yeah, I watched the debate last night, and it was because they asked Hillary, does she reckon Obama could beat McCain? And she said yes, which is quite interesting.
There is an important point of consideration here. It's been my stated opinion in the past that it's not a question of whether or not McCain loses, it's a question of how badly does he lose. Because here in the United States, we tend to get touchy when the same party has had the White House for three terms in a row. But more critically, the price of oil is going up so fast that it's killing our economy, which is going to mean, because the average American votes with their wallet in the general election, the last thing we want is more Republican policy, because on the day that I punch my ballot, oil is going to be $130 or $150 a barrel. I'm going to have to give up my car, and I'm going to have to start riding a bicycle to get in here to the ATS studios.
Which is an interesting thing, and I just wonder, Daniel, whether that sort of similar impact will ripple through to the UK and impact Gordon Brown when he ultimately goes to the country.
I think with Gordon Brown, I think it won't be a single issue. Just people just go and think, you know what, I've had enough. We want someone else in, and I think it'll probably be a wipeout in the southeast where I live. It'd be interesting, well, you could agree with Martin, well, what happens in Scotland with the SNP, because that would be key to who gets in. Because if the SNP make huge gains, they will effectively kill the Labour Party, because the Labour Party have literally a limited amount of reputation in England than they do in Scotland.
Which, of course, moves us. We could talk about the Midlothian question for hours, but we probably don't want to there. So presumably, you know, from what you're saying then, Daniel, is that you believe that the Labour government is sort of a lame duck for the time being, and potentially the people of this country will sort of just stand up and change. Because if we think about it, elections are probably decided by what we call as the swing voters, the people who vacillate between the Labour Party and the Conservatives and maybe the Liberals. So, you know, there's potentially maybe in the UK, maybe only, 5 or 6 million people that maybe actually decide who actually gets into power, because most people will have made their mind up before they even step into the polling booth. You know, it could be historic family that, you know, they've always voted Conservative, they've always voted Liberal, or they've always voted Labour. So I think you're right. They have to get the swing voters, the people who move from party to party, to decide to move away. And you're right. I suspect you could be seeing a fairly big wipeout, very similar to the Conservatives had, you know, when Tony Blair came to power.
Exactly. And it's an exclusive for your show, because I know a few people in the Conservative Party HQ, and there is low-level talk between the Tories and the SNP, which, if there's a hung parliament, the Tories would bring the SNP into a Westminster government, which would effectively be the nuclear option on Labour. Because if that happens, they would probably have to give devolved taxation. They probably let them have a referendum vote of independence. And if they become independent, you know, that's goodbye Labour. That's Labour's heartland.
I hope the Republicans here in the United States take note of that.
I mean, I just wanted to dive down on that one a little bit, because that's a really interesting point that you've come up with there. Two things spring to mind. One, I'm trying to think the last time we had what was classed as a hung parliament in the UK, and it's
1976 with Howard Wilson, I think. After Teddy Heath, it was Teddy Heath, didn't he? The miners' strike.
You're quite right. It was, but I'm just sort of interested in that, you know, that a Conservative government might have to go to the SNP to form a government, because, you know, I suppose most people would have a view that the Scottish National Party are probably seen as being left-leaning rather than right-leaning.
Yeah. Well, the SNP used to have a ban on going to coalition with Tories because of Thatcher, but they've overturned it now. But on the other hand, you've got to ask yourself, if it's a hung parliament, and say the Tories won the popular vote, would the Liberal Democrats go in with the Labour Party, who didn't win the popular vote? That's another thing. Who's going to commit suicide, basically?
Say, speaking of committing suicide, I have got a question that I've just been dying to ask. And we're getting ready to wrap up here, so I'm afraid I'm just going to have to be the tacky American and step forward and ask. I recently heard on the BBC that a European court judge is trying to adjudicate the difference between a cake and a biscuit. My question for you guys, and I don't care who answers this at this point because I'm just dying to know, what is the difference between, I can't believe I'm saying this, but what is the difference between a cake, a biscuit, a chip, and a crisp?
Do you want to have a shot at this first, Daniel?
With the cake and biscuit thing, that's just another European Union myth with the straight banana thing. Well, it is, because of my kingdom, press is so paranoid about the European Union. Journalists sit in Brussels and will make up stories, and people believe it over it. As for chips and crisps, I think it's a just a translation thing of English into American English.
But also one of the other things is there are different in the UK, there are different tax regulations of whether how you pay VAT on whether something is classed as a cake or a biscuit. So also be another reason why that's taking place, in that I think it's if it's a cake, it's subject to VAT, and if it's a biscuit, it's not. It could be the other way around. So
I really can't see the Taxpayer Alliance protesting over that. Protest over council tax and not that.
You're right, but unfortunately, Justin, you know, it is an interesting thing that, you know, some parts of the press do jump on what the EU says and EU judges deciding on. And I'm sure even in the US, you'd say there are times when the Supreme Court might get involved in making a decision that the rest of the world just look in and just think, surely you have more important things to worry about.
I've never seen food law of this type make the news.
That's the pleasure of living on the other side of the Atlantic.
You know, thanks for mentioning that. It's just, I'm going to add that to my list of reasons for being here, because if I didn't live in America, I would come to America.
Well, and I'm not sure. Hey, we can always put Daniel on the spot here, and he said, you know, would you share the same view if you didn't live in Europe? Would you come and would you come to Europe?
If I lived in Europe, would I come to it? Yeah, why not? Europe's a big place.
Thanks very much for your time today, Daniel. We really appreciate the fact that you trusted us enough to reveal secrets. We hope to have you back on the show again someday.
Well, I've enjoyed myself very much, and I'd be more than welcome to come back.
Well, thank you very much, and I suppose I can say goodnight to you, because I know actually what time it is in the UK.
Good night, Ralph.
Okay, then. Thank you very much, Daniel.
That's okay. God bless. Bye.
Well, I have to say, we bagged another excellent member there who was intelligent, articulate, and quite happy to share his views on a whole range of subjects. And I must apologise, we did jump in on him a little bit, but I was so keen to ask him questions because he was very, very forthcoming, but very sharp and intelligent, Justin.
Well, I think if they ever approve a budget for a foreign correspondent, I think we're going to have to put his name on the list.
Absolutely, because he could range across a whole raft of subjects, which, you know, just goes to show again the quality of people that post on the political forums in AboveTopSecret.com. So, you know, Justin and I, we are blessed with being able to call on members and have, you know, sharp and intelligent and articulate members who, I've got to say, keep both you and I on our toes for the type of questions and the quality of questions we need to ask them.
Well, I'm still going to be a little more careful in the future when I approach a bag of potato chips or a plate of French fries.
Well, French fries, I can probably agree with you there. And it's, yes, it is interesting when I travel to the States and sort of I see a meal and it's served with crisps or it's served with chip or, yeah, crisps. And I think, what am I going to get? But, hey, I just smile and whatever's served to me, I just eat because that's the way I was brought up.
Well, there you go. Now, speaking of being brought up, did anybody get the answer to your 500-point trivia challenge last week?
They certainly did, and my question was, the London Declaration of 1949 was a milestone in the development of which modern-day organisation? And I'm not afraid, I'm delighted. Expert 11 was the first person to give the right answer, and the answer I was looking for was the Commonwealth, or also known as the British Commonwealth, but probably more called the Commonwealth today. However, I do want to say that Infinite, who was just on the show, did talk about the Council of Europe, which was created in 1949 via the Treaty of London. But I was very specific in my question about asking about the London Declaration. So in this instance, Expert 11, you get 500 points. And it's your turn to see if you can baffle our viewers and listeners.
Well, you know, I'm just so fascinated by the Gordon Brown visit that I can't help asking a trivia question that's related to that. Today, as President Bush spoke with Prime Minister Brown out in the Rose Garden, he offered to do something for Prime Minister Brown today. Little bit on the unusual side. It's not an offer that most presidents make to their high-level guests, and yet he did it. He was honest about it. And he even volunteered his wife for this. So Mr. and Mrs. Bush were, at least for a moment, obligated to do a little something unusual for Gordon Brown. And my question is, what was that?
Hmm. Yes, and we probably need to say that, you know, if we can keep the answers, you know, clean and decent would probably be fairly helpful, and they must be compliant with the T's and C's on AboveTopSecret.com.
Well, actually, I'll give you a hint. In keeping with today's show theme, it's related to food.
I've no idea. I'm going to have to go and find that transmission then, because I actually haven't seen it live. So I'm sure it'll be on one of the satellite stations that I can get hold of. So I'll have to watch that one. And the good, not good news, but certainly things hot up in the U.S. presidential elections next week.
Oh, yes, indeed. We're going to have our Pennsylvania primary. And starting today or tomorrow, you won't be able to turn on your TV or pick up a newspaper without seeing something that relates to that. So it'll certainly be central to our discussions next week. But in the meantime, I would like to point out that there has been a 21st debate. Hillary and Barack did, in fact, duke it out last night at the Constitution Center in Philadelphia. So if you didn't hear about it and you want to see it, because we talked about it on the show today, then go to YouTube. The videos are there already. I personally am going to go back into the ATS Media Center, where they have 45 big-screen plasma TVs, and just watch it there.
No, because I was going to use them for playing games with Justin.
Oh, well, I see. That's obviously a more important thing to do, so I guess I'll just go home and watch it on my laptop computer.
No, I'm only joking. Yeah, you can use it for that one. Sometimes management get upset if I do that one. So.
No, really, it's okay. I want to see you do it and get away with it.
I probably won't get away with it, and I'll probably get smacked on the head by somebody, but never mind. Don't forget to check out our sister shows, the BTS Mix with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock, and of course the ATS Mix show with Johnny and Dave. Until next time, I'm Martin Bain.
I'm Justin Case, and we'll see you next week on the Above Politics show.
Hello everyone, I'm Spencer Tracy. Along with Doc Hancock, I host the new BTS Mix show. We have a lot of fun, and when we're done with our shows, we like to head over and listen to our sister shows, the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous, and the Above Politics show with Martin Bain and Justin Case on the Above Network LLC. The ATS Mix show with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous is the source for the latest information on breaking stories, conspiracy theories, and some stuff that's just plain weird. Johnny and Dave have insightful discussions about member posts, member interviews, and exclusive interviews with experts in their field. When I need the latest news and insight from the political arena, I log on to the Above Politics show with Martin Bain and Justin Case. Martin and Justin really break it down for me. They discuss member posts, interview members about their stance on the issues, and they have access to today's noted political figures and authors. So come on over and deny boredom with me, Spencer Tracy, and my co-host, the marvelous Doc Hancock, on the BTS Mix Show. Deny ignorance with the ATS Mix Show with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous, and deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case. Be part of the revolution. The Above Network LLC.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at AbovePolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.